Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Bob and Yurt Live. I'm the pastor of Denver Bible Church. By the way, our telethon is at $16,600, so please help if you can, 800-8-N-Yurt or online, kgov.com. So, are the Swedes nuts? The Swedes from Sweden, are they nuts or what? They are materialists. They've largely removed God from their understanding of reality. We're not spiritual beings, we're just physical, we're just biological, and yet they teach their kids that there are no differences between men and women, that we're the same. Now, think about that. If we are only physical, if we are only biological, if there is no spiritual dimension to who we are, and then you want to teach kids that there's no difference between men and women, do you realize how mentally ill that is? How intellectually deficient that is. In the scriptures, we learn that we are body, soul, and spirit. And even though our physical bodies are so dramatically different, right? Men are, well, if it's all about physics, men are a lot stronger than women. I mean, what high school basketball team in Denver can't beat the women's college champions? Is there one? Got to go to a pretty wimpy high school in Denver to find a team that can't beat the women's basketball college champs. So men are stronger. Men are faster. Men are more interested in science and technology and math, generally speaking. So if we only look at the world through the lens of physics and chemistry, then clearly the differences between men and women are so significant that women could never hope to catch up ever. But the Bible teaches us that we have equal value and worth, that we are eternally valuable to God in His eyes. Value, worth, is in the eye of the beholder. And we are equally valuable to God in Christ. And outside of Christ, but in Christ, there is neither male nor female, Jew or Gentile, and that also demolishes the hatred of racism. So we are all equally valuable, and because we are not just bodies, like plants are just bodies, there's some robotic animals, like insects. They seem to be robotic animals, like biological robots. But then there are animals that you can actually have a relationship with. And those animals, they have some quality, some depth of a soul. And to have awareness, you need something that's not physical because knowledge is not physical. Awareness is not physical. So there are animals that you could have as pets that you actually do have a relationship with at some level, and they have a body and a soul, where we human beings, God made us in His likeness and in His image, and we are body, soul, and spirit. In fact, the greater part of who we are is our spiritual dimension. Because even when this body, even when our bodies are destroyed and they're buried in the ground, or they're cremated, or we're lost at sea and eaten by sharks, whatever, even when our body is destroyed, we in no way are anything less than what we were, and we will stand before God and see Him. And those who love Him and trust in Him, we will be given glorified bodies, and how awesome that will be to do away with the pain and the suffering that is a result of rebellion, the fall, sin against God. So it's in our non-biological dimensions that our equality lies. It is not in our physical dimensions. If we were as mentally ill as the Swedes are generally, as far as their public policy goes, and they are materialists, They believe in nothing more than physics and chemistry. And then they want to tell their children, in fact, they do teach them, that there are no differences between men and women. How bizarre, how broken, how absurd. And if we think that we can win over public opinion by being rational, by making the better arguments, by being logical, clearly that's not the case. Perhaps we exaggerate the degree to which that may have been the case in the past. Jesus had all perfect arguments. His arguments were not insufficient in any way whatsoever, and he never won over the people. He never did. I mean, there were plenty of times when large crowds would gather, but Jesus himself points out it's not because of his message, it's because what they thought they could get out of him, whether food or miracles, some excitement, let's rub shoulders with the miracle worker. So men and women, viva la difference, the differences are extraordinary, and as you rebel against God, you head toward utter ignorance, utter absurdity, you're at war with reality, you're at war with yourself and your neighbors, and that's because you're at war with God. So there are topics that we said the last few shows that we want to get to, the police in Raleigh, North Carolina, asking Google to provide them with user data. We want to talk about that. Also, a report on referee shortages in youth sports. And boy, it's that the time for that has come with badly behaved parents. I've noticed that in youth hockey, when you get to higher levels of play, travel hockey, the better teams, that the parents seem to behave better. And perhaps that's because they've been around so long and they get it. I'm not quite sure. But in-house leagues and lower level of play, wow, what a nightmare. That's what we've seen over 12 years of Cheryl and I have, not between us, each of us have seen more than 1,000 youth hockey games, more than 1,000. So I'd say we're experts at some level. So I want to tell you about one parent from Boulder, Colorado, in particular. Also, we'll get to the white farmers fleeing South Africa because of the socialism there, their Venezuela wannabes. The latest in Venezuela is the news in the Miami Herald, the profile of youth gangs in Caracas and apparently around the country, where kids, young kids, preteens up through their early 20s, they form gangs, and the main purpose, and they're living on the streets, and the main purpose is to claim ownership of dumpsters where they think they can find something to eat and even something to drink, more so than they can get at home. It's just so horrific, such a crisis, what's going on in Venezuela and South Africa. They want to emulate Venezuela. They're working on that. So there's quite a few things we want to get to. Also, hey, liberals hate the military, right? Is that true or false, generally? Liberals hate the military, just like they hate the police. They hate things that at least symbolize right and wrong, justice, morality. That's why they hate America, because they view America as a Christian nation. And so even though we're not, they hate America because of that. And they prefer any culture around the world. They even prefer Islamic extremism to evangelical churches. That's evident. Why did they hate George W. Bush? I mean, he was pro-abortion, pro-homosexuality. He was a socialist. He gave, what, billions of dollars to Planned Parenthood. Why do they hate George W. Bush? It's because to them, they see him as a Christian. He's not a Christian. At least all the evidence from his life is that he's not a Christian. I don't know his heart and his soul, but if you judge him by his fruit, he's pretty evil. I mean, he'd much rather hang out with Planned Parenthood than with fundamentalist Christians, that's for sure. So, and his family has spent decades funding and supporting Planned Parenthood while getting power by telling Christians that they're against Planned Parenthood. So I just wanted to point out in passing that liberals hate the military, and liberals want homos and transsexuals to be in the military, right? Therefore, liberals hate homosexuals and transsexuals. They must, if they hate the military, and they want homos and transsexuals to be in the military. You know, you could probably make 100 discrete arguments to show that liberals hate trans and homosexuals. You could probably make 100 discrete arguments to show that liberals hate homosexuals. But then they might not be that discreet, I guess. Ha! Now there's a homonym I never thought of, discreet and discreet. Okay, so when you see a politician like Bill Clinton over the decades affirming homosexuality, and you wonder, why is it that he, and this is back when still a majority of the population recognized that homosexuality was perverse, that it was disgusting, and yet he affirmed homosexuality. Why would that be? Is it because might he want to hang out in a homosexual bar? Might he be interested in that? No, not likely. When Bill Clinton won his election, I recall going on the air and saying, well, the good news is that he's a heterosexual. That was about it. That was about the only good news I could think of. At least he's not a homo. I mean, he's evil and almost every imaginable way, but not in that way. So why then would somebody like Bill Clinton approve of, affirm, promote homosexuality? It's because it's an expression of his rebellion against God. And if you could remove standards on sexual behavior, then he can be vindicated. If there are virtually no standards for sexual behavior, then he's okay. And so when we look at the news, when we see things happening, it's important to not just understand events from the culture's perspective, or even from the conservative talking head perspective or Christian leadership perspective, but we need to understand the events around us and even in our own private lives from God's perspective, from the perspective of Jesus Christ. So today, increasingly, you have Republican leaders, conservative leaders, Christian leaders who are affirming homosexuality. And if you get your perspective from those around you who share many of your views, well, then you have no foundation. You're not anchored in the truth. And you are, as the Bible describes, you are vulnerable to the shifting sands that will slide out from beneath your feet. And you'll fall, you'll crumble. You may be saved, the Bible says, as if by fire, but all the fruit that could have come from your life will be lost. So, Raleigh, North Carolina. The police have asked Google, they're investigating a crime, and they have asked Google, we would like your user data to identify everyone who was in the vicinity of this crime scene at the time of the crime. Now, that's extraordinary. That's tremendous. That's absolutely fabulous. That's the kind of important use of technology that the government needs to fulfill one of its three primary functions, its God-given functions. It doesn't have the God-given responsibility to handle healthcare or education or commerce or dozens of other areas that it has imposed itself onto, but it has the responsibility to manage infrastructure like waterways and bridges and so on, airwaves, and criminal justice and the military defense of nations. So criminal justice and the military, they're very closely related. Defending human rights locally in a civil capacity, and then nationally in a national and international. That's it. Those are the government's three God-given responsibilities. And whatever else it does, it's usurping that authority. So if the government wants to educate children, it's stealing that responsibility from parents. Parents are foolish when they relinquish that responsibility to the government. And when, hey, the kids, they start out so cute, so wonderful, they even, boy, they listen to their parents about God and values and morality. And they're in first grade and they still do, and second grade they still do, and third grade they still do, and as the grades get higher. And then there's some students who find out, oh, you're a Christian and you believe that? And then that student becomes a goal, a challenge to try to seduce that student. So we have parents who put their kids in public schools, and then when the goal of the public school curriculum, which is to turn those kids against God, when that goal sees fruition, and then the parents are shocked, why has this happened to us? Why has this happened to our children? And they should realize, well, we did this to ourselves. We did this to our kids. We set our kids up to fail, and it really is a tragedy. So what parents need to do is reevaluate their priorities, their goals, their lifestyle, and figure out, prioritize providing a Christian education, preferably a homeschool Christian education, to their children. So education, health care, and so on, social programs, welfare, all that, that's not part of the government's function. And when they usurp that, then there are tens of millions, hundreds of millions of individuals who then relinquish their own responsibility in those areas, and then things, people suffer because of that. Now, the government, the more it does, the less attention it gives to its God-given responsibilities. And those three responsibilities, criminal justice, the military, and infrastructure, if that's all the government did, we would not have a crime epidemic. Foreign nations and terrorist organizations would not have as much success as they have harassing us and even killing us. So if the government is focusing on criminal justice and a crime happens, and it really shouldn't matter how serious of a crime it is, the Christian cliches that all sins are equal, of course, how absurd that is, how false that is. Some crimes in the Bible, God says, should be punished with restitution. Other times you flog a convicted criminal. Other times, you put him to death. Big difference in the way that God says that the government should punish criminals, and crime is a certain category of sin. Not all sin is crime, but all crime is sin. And so God has given this responsibility to the government to deter crime, to apprehend criminals, to then put them through a trial, and if convicted, then to swiftly punish them. And so the way our culture is working, we live in such a crime-infested society that most crimes the police don't care about. It's not exactly the fault of the police because they're overwhelmed. They're working in a crime-ridden society. So it's mostly the fault of the judges and the lawmakers and the lawyers. That it's mostly their fault. And with them, in the top tier of those who have responsibility, are the Christian leaders who have undermined the authority of the scriptures in the eyes of tens of millions of Christians, who therefore have virtually no effective influence on the culture and on public policy. So that if we gave over the nation, if we gave over the government, all of governmental authority to pick the top 10 Christian leaders in America, and we said, okay, you guys are running everything, you have all authority. If we were to do that, 10 years later, America would be twice the son of hell as it is today, 10 years later. It would be worse. And we have been explaining that for, 27 years now on the air and demonstrating how that is and why that is. So the police should use every just means at their disposal to investigate a crime and to bring the criminal to justice. And so whatever the crime is, if the police have access to a camera that catches license plates, and whether a bicycle is stolen or someone is murdered, and they see, well, during that 20-minute window, these four cars were there, these four license plates, and then they go investigate. And they find out that the one car was driven by an 81-year-old gal who was headed to the grocery store, shopped, and went back home. Probably didn't steal the car. Probably didn't commit the murder. And then they go through and they look at, these are all potential suspects. So now with technology, and especially how hard it is to live off the grid, when your cell phone can practically become a confession because of these three horrific crimes in the past 4 months, it turns out you were in the vicinity of all three of them. That's significant evidence. The police investigate. They find one or two more pieces of evidence. They present it to a judge, and you're convicted. And then, of course, criminals will have to resort to not using their phones. Good luck with that. And resort to not using their cars, because guess what? Their cars will turn them in also. And resort to not using all kinds of technology. And they'll have to put a bag over their head because of all the cameras that are out there and facial recognition. So this technology, while there are so many immoral things done with the technology, we Christians shouldn't join the ranks of the paranoid and say we don't want technology used to find criminals. No, we do. Could it be taken advantage of? That's a question that a moron asks, because everything could be taken advantage of. A sack of rice could be taken advantage of. Somebody could drop a sack of rice on a poor guy's head and kill him. Everything could be taken advantage of. Some paranoid people say, well, do you know that the government has facilities that could be turned into camps? Well, the government has atomic weapons. I mean, they have guns. They got tanks. They got attack helicopters. They got all kinds of stuff. And so paranoia is not one of the fruits of the Spirit. It doesn't help Christians better understand the world they live in and know how to impart wisdom so that those around them could see, hey, you know what? This person is not an idiot. This person is not a fool. This person is thoughtful. Where is this person getting all their ideas from? Turns out from Jesus Christ. But that's really not where we're getting our ideas as the church. We're getting them more from Hillary Clinton, Hillary, Hollywood, Huma, the humanist. That's where we're getting our ideas from, really. Because the cliches, like Hillary's favorite Bible verse, is the favorite Bible verse of a lot of our megachurch pastors. Don't judge. Even though Jesus said, first, stop committing the same sin, and then you will be qualified to judge your neighbor. Because if you don't judge him, you don't love him. You hate him. It's called apathy. All right, so hopefully we'll get to the point where we will have a national DNA database so that it will become almost impossible for people to commit sexual assault and many other crimes without being identified. That would be awesome, wouldn't it? Okay, I've been promising. I want to get to the story about the shortage on referees. This is not in North Carolina. It's in South Carolina, and it's just in one region, but surely it's symptomatic. My own dad, Bob Enyart, he tried to be a referee in our Little League baseball back in Prospect Park, New Jersey, back in the 1960s, 1970s. And so he thought, okay, I'll try this. He was a referee for one game. And my dad was strong. He had been a boxer. He was in construction. He was a tough guy. He'd race. We had this incredible hill near our home, McFarland Avenue. I mean, it was so steep. We're kids. We grew up there. Kids were afraid to ride down the street on their bicycle. It's that steep, real steep. So my father would have a race up the hill, and they would have to carry a tire from a truck while they're running up the hill. He was just a tough guy. And here he is trying to be an umpire at a Little League game, And the parents are yelling and criticizing. And this is before he became a Christian. He became a Christian the year I went off to Bible college. He and I wrote letters back and forth. It was just astounding. It was incredible. And, I mean, I could just picture that my dad would want to deck one of these parents. And he thinks, this is not worth it. And he never did it again. He was never an umpire again. And that was too bad. By the way, if he had hung around a bit, he might have found out that some of the coaches, I'm thinking of two in particular, Artie and Herbie, were perverts. And they would bring pornography for the kids on the teams. Not all the kids, just the cool kids. And I recall sitting in one of their vans filled with pornography, magazines. They had pornography audio tapes, 8-track cassettes. They pop in and it's like a porn movie, but just the soundtrack. And I remember going camping overnight up in what we call the hayfields, and the pornography and the beer and so on. So real nightmare, total nightmare. And so in South Carolina, they've got this referee shortage because of badly behaved parents. And I was thinking about this one dad from Boulder, Colorado. We're playing against the Boulderites, and we're having a great game. And there's very few pleasures in life as great as beating Boulder. It's a wonderful thing. I would always sit, and when you're at a hockey game, of course, the whole length of the rink, Cheryl and I would always sit right on the red line between the two camps of parents because, well, they'd get so mad at each other, and they'd cuss, and it'd be terrible. And we, our rule, our style, is in 1,000 games of youth hockey, we never once shouted out in anger, no criticisms, not against the refs, not against the other teams. We would only cheer. If we didn't have a good thought, we'd keep our mouths shut. And that's how we were as parents and fans at a youth hockey game. And so I'd always sit in the middle as sort of a barrier to keep the warring parties apart. And so this one Boulder fan was shouting and cussing, mad. And then he started to call out individual kids on our team by their numbers. Then he threatened to beat up one of the kids by number because he didn't like the play that just happened. So I went over to him and I sat next to him, and all the Boulder parents are looking. And I said to him, "You're done behaving like this." And he said, "You're not going to tell me what to do." And I put my arm around him and I said, "You're done behaving like this, or you and I could go outside, and on the way I'm calling the police. You're done." And he got up and he was angry. And he cussed at me, and he left. And he didn't come back in for the rest of the game. That was in the first quarter of the game. The Boulder parents came up to me, so many of them, and thanked me for kicking him out of the ice rink. And after the game, it was maybe an hour and a half later, we're leaving out in the parking lot, and there he is. And he came up, and he apologized. That was great. But the way that parents respond to circumstances in youth sports, it is so embarrassing, and it's embarrassing to the public schools. You know why? Because their public school is showing. That's why. It's the parents, they say. Well, the parents all went to public school. Hey, we're out of time. KGov.com. May God bless you.